Geography. Free space for geography. Extending teaching and learning methods beyond the boundaries of campus.
Did you hear about Frontline?
Well, Frontline is camping
with Frontline.
Frontline, by the way, has outstanding productions.
Geography Frontline.
Hey Frontliners, it's good to be back on air with episode 113 of Geography Frontline. During this week I was thinking a lot about last week's topic, the mural art we've talked about. The one that can be found in places like Windward, Miami, for example. Remember? As I was walking the streets of my Hyde Park neighborhood here in Austin, and by the way, it this time of year you can actually walk without getting sunburned. I spotted some other kind of public art that kind of changed the look of the streets. Yeah, so we're gonna talk about that today, and so today's topic would be yarn bombing. But before we get into the topic of yarn bombing, let us rewind the discussion for a second and go back to the main topic or main question. Can art transform a neighborhood? And in episode 112, so last week, we did a quick vote on that question. And here are the results. Can art transform a neighborhood? No, it cannot, said only 17% of the frontliners, and 83% decided to click on yes, it can. So this result is not so unexpected, but if you remember, I didn't only ask for a yes or no, but for an explanation why you decided to go with one or the other answer. And here we still have quite some work to do. I'm talking about feedback. If you don't send in your opinion, we will never have a chance to dig deeper into the different topics. And come on, frontliners, just add a short comment, send me an email, or even better, talk to the voicemail and let us know what you're thinking about the different things we're discussing in the show. Like Malte, yeah, he posted his comment on our Facebook page. And if you're listening to the show for the first time, let me introduce you to facebook.com/geography, our social web presence, where you can post almost everything Frontline on Facebook. Tja, Malte says, I think art can definitely transform a neighborhood, for better or for worse. The most important thing is how art is perceived. I remember a discussion about graffiti and how a lot of people said that they think it's ugly and should be banned. But behind the term graffiti stands a very diverse culture. This should be always considered. So yes, art can transform a neighborhood, but not everybody will welcome the change. Yeah, thank you, Malte. That is a great comment. And there are some interesting points in this comment. First would be about perception. The statement about how art is perceived implies subjectivity, right? Because without acknowledging that everyone has his or her own perception, this wouldn't work. And you don't have to become a radical constructivist, of course, to argue like this. But thinking that the world exists per se and that there is something like objectivity going on, that won't fit into this thinking. So yes, everybody perceives the environment and therefore art differently. Second stop, graffiti. Graffiti is an art form. The reasons, including aesthetic criteria, as to why it is an art form, far outweigh the criticism of illegality, incoherence, and non-standard presentation. Yeah, this sentence is taken from an online paper titled Graffiti Art, an Essay Concerning the Recognition of Some Forms of Graffiti as Art. And it contains some useful information, and it's really good read, easy read, and it contains literature on the topic. So you'll find a link to the text in the show notes. So if you would like to read a little about graffiti, feel free to do so. And I would really like to talk about graffiti in an upcoming episode. You know that, frontliners? Perhaps we can collect some texts, websites, videos, and so on, and even our own comments on graffiti over the next weeks. And Yeah, this would be really great. Think about the question of this form of art being illegal, for example. Yeah. Last thing I would like to add to Malte's comment is the statement that not everybody will welcome the change that art might bring to a neighborhood. Yeah, I think that's a good point. We've talked about gentrification last week and the fact that rising housing prices and a transforming neighborhood will drive some of the long-established residents away. This is really a good point, as I said. Good way to think about that. And if you would like to add some comments to Malte's suggestions and points he made, send in your comments to comment@geography.com or talk to the voicemail. You know, if you've got a Skype account, just open it up and type in Geography to get connected, and you can call in and just leave your auditive comment on the Geography voicemail. Before we listen to some music, let's turn our ears to a little less organized form of sound. You might not know that, but this section of the show has one purpose: to sensitize ourselves for the sonic environment that surrounds us basically all the time, right? It's almost impossible to find a spot on Earth where you hear no sounds. And especially in an urban environment, there are so many of them that it's really worth to take a listen. And I think by not only hearing but listening to the sounds that surround us, we might get a better understanding of our environment and realize that it's not only the visual impact that matters. If we bring up perception again, if we talk about that again, that this is really important. And last week I found this sound piece for you. Listen to that again. So any idea what it is? Oh, yeah. In contrast to episode 111, this time we didn't get any guesses about this sound, and so I'll try something new this week. You know what? We'll stick with the same sound, but I will make it accessible not only via this episode, but also upload it to our Facebook page. We'll say if it works. I'll have to check that after I've recorded the show. So check out the facebook.com/geography page and look for the post containing this sound file. And then you can post your thoughts about it on the Facebook wall, or if you don't want to share your thoughts that way, just send me an email to comment@geography.com with your answer, or you send me a voicemail. Know that Skype name, I just said it is Geography, and leave your guess about this week's sound acoustically. So let's see if we can attract more frontliners to respond by using Facebook.
I'm going down to the drugstore, gonna buy me a skein of yarn.
This song is a nice teaser for our next topic.
I'm going down to the drugstore, buy a big old skein of yarn.
Because if we are talking about yarn bombing, we have to think about knitting.
I'm gonna knit me a kitten, even if you don't give a darn.
This is Jacob Holler, the Kitten Knitting Blues.
I got a pair of big round needles, you should listen to them purr. Yeah, I got a pair of big round needles, hear them summer bitches purr. I'm gonna knit me a kitten, I'm gonna cover him all up with fur. Now I don't want no store-bought kitten, I can't stand them kitten farms. I wants me a homemade kitten with all those kitten charms. So I guess I'll knit me a kitten any color fur I choose. I can barely wait for my kitten, that's why I got me the blues. Yeah, I'm gonna knit me a kitten just a couple more months ago. These things take time, man, you know that. I'm gonna knit me a kitten just about 8 or 9 months ago. Oh, baby, I don't know if I can wait that long. I'm gonna knit me a Siamese, or maybe even a calico. I'm a-getting closer, I can almost hear the muse. Oh, man, so cute. Yeah, I'm getting closer. I swear I can hear those kitten mews. I just can't wait to finish. I got the kitten knitting blues. No, I just can't wait to finish. That's why I got those kitten knitting blues.
Oh, yeah. That is Jacob Holler, the Kitten Knitting Blues, from his album Imaginary Internet Man. From the Podsafe Music Network, you find that on music.mevio.com. And this time, the song isn't available in the iTunes store. But you can watch Jacob Holler performing it live in front of his webcam. Yeah, that's right. The YouTube link to the video can be found in the show notes. Now, let's continue talking about public art. I looked around and found another great example of mural works in Cincinnati, organized by a company called Artworks. On their website, they state, "Our city is a gallery." That's the premise behind Mural Works, Cincinnati's award-winning public art employment program. Artworks employs teen and professional artists to work side-by-side with communities to transform our region. Since Mural Works began in 2007, Artworks has painted 34 murals in 25 neighborhoods in Cincinnati and northern Kentucky. Your neighborhood can be next. So, young people from the neighborhoods are directly involved with the work, and that ties the art projects to the local community. An artist not only transforming the look of the neighborhoods, but also providing young people with jobs.
They're working for Artworks, a nonprofit dedicated to hiring teens, creating art that'll transform neighborhoods and young lives.
Yeah, this piece of audio comes from a video about the Cincinnati project, in which Colleen Houston, director of programs, tells us about the people working in this project.
We've employed 19 artists, including 15 teenagers, to work on this project, and it's their summer job.
Yeah, that sounds like a really nice summer job, right? Not only if you love your community, but also for your future career. If you think about it, think about your CV and all extra activities that universities and companies really like to see if they think about offering you a place or a job.
I really, really appreciate what they do for me because, I mean, when it comes to college portfolio and things like that, they really like to see that you're helping out your community and you're doing what you're going to school for.
Yeah. Okay. So far for Mural Works, and when I took a closer look at all the projects Artworks is doing, I thought of another public art that I couldn't find there, but in my own neighborhood. And have you ever seen streetlights, road signs, or bus stops that were covered with knitting? In Austin, you can find that all over the place. And I think, hey, watch out, individual perception. Yeah, I think this looks really great and enriches life in the city. The knitting is done in all colors and transforms gray into colorful. Yeah, I would put it like this. And there is a name for it, and it's called yarn bombing. Wikipedia, normally not one of my favorite websites because of the lack of scientific foundation, has the following to say about yarn bombing. They say, yarn bombing, yarn storming, guerrilla knitting, or graffiti knitting, there we have graffiti again, by the way, is a type of graffiti or street art that employs colorful displays of knitted or crocheted cloth rather than paint or chalk. Yarn bombing, yeah, the link to that, I'll put it in the show notes, you can read that if you want to. So Magda Sayek, supposedly is the mother of yarn bombing. 2 days ago, the Wall Street Journal writes about her in its online edition. Mrs. Sayek is known for yarn bombing or covering mundane objects, street signs, stairs, gates, pipes, with colorful knit and crocheted work. She buys vintage afghans from thrift shops, uses automated circular knit looms to create solid or striped pieces, and outsources hand knitting or crocheting to a team of talented yarn workers around Austin, Texas, where she lives. She lives right in my town. Nice. So if you want to know more about Magda Sajek, just take a look at her website. The URL is in today's show notes. And there's also an interesting video on YouTube where she describes her gray environment as the motor for her work and draws an analogy to graffiti.
I looked at my gray urban environment of Houston and felt powerless. We didn't have a spray can. We had knitting.
Yeah, perhaps I'm repeating myself here, but I would really love to do a show about graffiti sometime. Okay, so what is it exactly that is so great about this type of public art? Really? We can see something warm and human in an urban environment that isn't so human anymore? Is that what this is all about? I would really like to hear your take on this, frontliners. In today's quick vote. Yarn bombing. A. We feel something human. B. It's nice to look at it. C. Another part of the city. D. Some stupid idea. Or E. Another opinion. Now, tell us how you feel about yarn bombing. Or send in your pictures of public knitting in your hometown if you can spot anything. Just take a picture and upload that to our Facebook page or send this to comment@geography.com. Or even better, tell us about your approach to that kind of public art if you are doing yarn bombing yourself. That would be awesome. It's time again to take a listen back in time to Alexander von Humboldt and his 1979 voyage from Europe to the Americas. Let's hear if he can inspire us today to love geography even more. So bring up the text now. Let's see. I was skipping some pages. Not in the right spot now. Forgive me about that. But okay. Here it is. We're starting. The establishment of a botanical garden at Tenerife is a very happy idea. So he's talking about a botanical garden on the Canary Islands. On account of the influence it is likely to have on the progress of botany and on the introduction of useful plants into Europe. But that's not the only thing, right? I think botanical gardens have a long tradition, right? Like zoos, for example. How could I put it? Perhaps like bringing the alien home to take a look at it, to take a closer look. Lose the fear about it and deconstruct it into something only foreign and not alien anymore. Yeah, but these gardens are also signs of power, or were signs of power, don't you think? I can afford to look at these plants every day now and you can't. Great thing. I'm rich, you're poor. And so on. Botanical gardens. Some place where you can feel the power. Think about that. Perhaps you might want to send me a comment. And then there's another passage as Humboldt is still on the Canary Islands. I have to say I'm really waiting for him to embark to the Americas now, but okay, we're on page 116 and he's still there. The following passage, and this will be the last we're discussing for today, or I'm reading to you. For the next passage, I want you to listen to that passage very closely. I don't know if you've ever been on a field trip and had to write a protocol or paper or something on a specific day of the excursion, but you would always not only have to describe what you saw and what might be of geographical relevance, but also would have to look up additional information about the route or something you would see, or anything that might be of interest. So now listen how detailed and rich Humboldt's descriptions are, and perhaps we might learn something out of this. On leaving Orotava, a narrow and stony pathway led us through a beautiful forest of chestnut trees, El Monte de Castaños, to a site covered with brambles, some species of laurels, and arborescent heaths. The trunks of the latter grow to an extraordinary size, and the flowers with which they are loaded form an agreeable contrast during a great part of the year to the Hypericum canariense, which is very abundant at this height. We stopped to take in our provision of water under a solitary fir tree. This station is known in the country by the name of Pino del Dornajito. Its height, according to the barometrical measurement of M. de Borda, is 522 toises, and it commands a magnificent prospect of the sea and a whole of the northern part of the island. And now ask yourself, if you would be wandering around that part of Earth, if you would be able to write something like this and to do all the research, think about that in 1799 there was no internet. It was really hard to get all this information, and so I had to bring books, read books. Whoa, what a concept. And have a very broad knowledge to deconstruct and understand really what you see in the field. So that's something you could never have enough of, that knowledge, to understand and see what you see, what you're seeing. And so, perhaps if you've ever written such a paper, or just a few pages of a field trip day, just take a look at it again and think about if you could have done better. I'm pretty sure that anybody of us could have done better. But okay, anyways, so that's it for today's Humboldt's Voyage. Today, I want to announce an upcoming event that is taking place in Germany next year, but it's of importance for all geographers from around the world. It's the 32nd International Geographical Congress, taking place from the 26th to the 30th of August in 2012 in Cologne. And on their website, they state, "The 32nd International Geographical Congress in Cologne focuses scientific attention on the core themes of humanity." Researchers from around the world are expected in Cologne in 2012. Geographers bring the wide-ranging perspectives and methodology of their subject to bear on four major thematic complexes and contribute to the solution of urgent scientific and socio-political issues, bringing research down to earth. Okay, bringing research down to earth. That sounds like a really bad movie. Okay, well, anyways, so what's it all about? The main topics are global change and globalization. Second would be society and environment. Third, risks and conflicts. And the fourth one, urbanization and demographic change. So, if you should be interested in participating, call for papers is extended until January 8th. So, make sure to check out the website and submit your paper if you want to give a talk. So, this would be all for today. Episode 113 of Geography Frontline has come to an end. Yeah, let's talk some more about public art next week and all other topics you are interested in, I think, that could be interesting for us. And perhaps we should talk about Christmas. Discuss both social and economic impacts. Send in your comments, and never forget, the network is us.